Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from under widely sprayed South Korean skies, you're listening to episode number 59 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Fingers crossed, we're hoping renowned Canadian ufologist Grant Cameron will hold good on his promise to join us tonight, as over the next 90 minutes or so, we plan to navigate our way through one of his better-known fields of expertise, the cosmic world of rock stars, celebrity, and UFOs. Grant first became involved in ufology back in 1975, following his personal southern Manitoba sighting of a strange, unearthly object, which later became known as Charlie Red Star. Since this time, he's focused his research interests and energy mainly on archiving the UFO-related secrets of numerous American presidents, while also playing a central role in the so-called disclosure movement. Appearing as a regular feature guest at a whole wide array of ufological speaking events, Cameron is also a well-known TV, radio, and internet media personality. From Coast to Coast AM to the Jimmy Church Show, sailing on the Robin Hood is a coveted accolade he's yet to add to his extensive resume. Much of Grant's work can be found archived via his website, presidentialufo.com. He's actually someone that we're thinking of dubbing the Chuck Berry of ufology. Chuck was well known to show up to a lot of his gigs at the last minute with the promoters and fans not knowing whether he'd actually make it to the show or not. Today's show, of course, Rock Stars and UFOs. I kind of like that analogy myself. He did make it, it looks like, and we were just talking to him a minute ago there. So, Grant, thanks for dropping by Pirate Radio Podcast today. It's great to have you on board.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate your interest in what I'm doing with rock music. I've got a few subjects, but rock music is one of them. And it's kind of unusual because I'm a musical idiot. I had no interest in music, no background in music. And I just sort of got dragged down the rabbit hole one day with an email from someone talking about the connection between UFOs and rock music, and music in general. So,
yeah, you've done a lot of work, of course, in this area, as you say, just generally with your best known probably for work that you've done regarding American presidents and their experience with UFOs. Some of them have had personal sightings and as well as their just position policy-wise and so on and so forth. But today we're going to try to really focus and hone in on all the numerous rock and rollers that have had these encounters or experiences. So in the meantime, of course, too, we got Johnny Webb, it looks like, up there in the crow's nest. I think he managed to make his way up there all the way to the top of the ship there. So, Johnny, how do things look from your vantage point?
It's the middle of the night, so I'm not seeing much out there.
Yeah, well, we do have to set sail out into the bay here, and we're able to have some decent weather in front of us here without too many raucous waves or nothing, no Kraken or anything along those lines, of course. rearing its ugly head. Yeah, actually, and just quickly, too, to let people know, Johnny, you're typically, you ride shotgun, you've been best known with the work you've done with Dr. J Live, is that not correct?
That's right, yeah, I've worked with Dr. J Radio Live for about 4 years. We used to be on Art Bell's network, just before Art Bell, in fact, and so we got a big sort of guest welcome from that. But, yeah, we've been independent on YouTube and a few English channels that we sort of syndicate with there in the UK and one in Australia, and we're working on one in Spain at the moment. But, yeah, it's been an interesting ride, you know. I came in as an experiencer that had seen things, not actually been sort of taken or anything like that. But I found it very fascinating, and so being able to go to the horse's mouth and ask questions directly to these people. I realize some things are very sensitive and that you don't want to discredit people that you ask in a certain way. So there's that beautiful time of after the show or just before where you can just put a question in and it's personal and you get that reply. And I've been really fortunate to get some interesting results from the people that are in this field for the long haul, you know.
Indeed. And so just once again, it's great to have you up there riding shotgun, keeping a lookout for anything that may be headed our way that we might want to know about. So we will definitely keep you posted. We've also got a live streaming YouTube chat area that is taking off at the moment, quickly filling up with a handful of people wanting to tune in and listen to what it is that Grant has to offer here today regarding this whole matter of rock stars and their UFO experiences, possible even abductions or what have you. So let's see now where to start. With my research into the matter, one of the things, as far back as I was really able to take it, was, and I'm not sure if you've even heard of this or not, I'm guessing you actually probably have not, believe it or not, but Woody Guthrie wrote a song called My Flying Saucer that was covered by Wilco and Billy Bragg off of their, I don't think it was the Mermaid Avenue release, but it was a follow-up, a sequel to that. Have you heard the song My Flying Saucer?
I may have it in my list. I have a list of about 400 songs that were written about UFOs, this sort of thing. The earliest one I had was Ella Fitzgerald, so I don't know if yours is before. There was a lot of songs written about UFOs. It's unbelievable how many songs there were. When was this written?
Oh, well, here's the thing. That's the project that they did, actually. What Woody Guthrie did was it was strictly in lyrical form. What they did was they came along many years later, back in the mid-90s. You know, Woody passed away in, oh, gee, I think it was, what, 1969 or something like that, maybe 70. The Guthrie family members presented Billy Bragg and Wilco with his lyrics, and from there they just added melodies, give it a little bit of a musical sort of flair and interpretation. It's a really great album. Actually, both of them are just fantastic and really well worth, you know, listening to. So, yeah, I wish I could play it here. In fact, stream it via YouTube. Unfortunately, they're sticklers for anything like that with copyright. They'll demonetize this discussion that we're having here today in a heartbeat. Bob Dylan and Sony are the worst, believe it or not. They've taken a few of, well, one in particular, we did a 9/11 special back in September, and it's blocked worldwide, not just demonetized, but blocked, so.
Yeah, I did some writing on Dylan, because one of the things I do is not just the UFO connection, I do the book I wrote was called, the first one was called Inspired, the Paranormal World of Creativity, and I look at musicians, and it started as musicians, and then it moved on to other things like art and people who write books and stuff like that. And it's the whole idea that the guy who invented the laser, Charles Townes, said, where do good ideas come from anywhere? And so that was the thing that I was looking at, because I had my own, what I call a download experience, February 26, 2012, which was just blew me away. It came with absolute certainty. A bunch of stuff was all put into my head, all these pieces of a puzzle, and it all sort of fit together. And that's when I started looking at what I was referring to as downloads, and that's when I came across the fact that Paul McCartney had gotten the song Yesterday, one of the most produced songs of the 20th century, in a dream. And that's what led me down this road of looking at where musicians get their songs, where the inspiration comes from, where they say the inspiration comes from. And the UFO thing didn't start until, I guess it'd be about 3 years ago, I got a phone call from an experiencer. And experiencers are people who indicate that they've been on the ship or they've interacted with the beings. And there's a very famous experiencer who you're going to be seeing his story come out with Steven Spielberg and J.J. Abrams are going to do this, his story. Very prominent experiencer. And he contacted me. I'd had some experiences with him and had studied his case. And Warner Bros. Is going to do an $80 million movie on him. And so I had a lot of contact with him. He sends me an email and he said, Grant, I just want to let you know that there's this, what he calls a shining, a lady. There's aliens and then there's this lady who seems to be above the aliens. And she says, contact Grant and tell him the messages in the music. So he contacts me and he said, I was told to tell you that the message is in the music. And it's like, okay, whatever. I mean, good luck. I mean, never played an instrument. I don't listen to music. I'm a radio talk guy, or now I'm on, spend my time on the internet. But he said to me, he said, well, the one song that I was given an indication was involved was the song by Led Zeppelin called Kashmir. And I said, yeah, okay, whatever, you know. And when you look at the lyrics, there's actually a story that's being pushed right now by the CIA dealing with a portal, that there's this, there's a portal and they want this story out that this is for real. And they've actually back engineered a portal. And, the guy who's pushing it is Dr. Ronald Pandolfi, who was a top scientist at the CIA. And his daughter's name happened to be Kashmir. And the whole idea, in the song Kashmir is this thing where you're going from one sort of dimension to another. And this is what this portal thing is all about, this moving from one dimension to another. So anyway, he told me about Kashmir. And Kashmir has appeared in a lot of UFO movie trailers, like John Carpenter had appeared in there. And it appeared in a film on the new X-Men, which was the guy who created all that was Grant Morrison. And Grant Morrison is an experiencer. He's an abductee. He talks very openly about his abduction experience. So that song, okay, fine. But the thing that dragged me down the rabbit hole was, and the other song I'm pretty sure that they told me was involved was Neil Young's song called After the Gold Rush. And I said, really? Neil Young is one of them? And he said, yeah. If it hadn't been for the fact that Neil Young was one of the two people that he mentioned, I never would have ever gotten into the subject because I had no interest in music. The catch was that Neil Young, I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and Neil Young grew up here. That's what caught me. And I go, well, like, Neil Young? So that's what made me look at the Neil Young song called After the Gold Rush, and it was written in 1968. And what I discovered from that was that basically he's talking about the fact that we're treating the world like a gold rush, and when the gold is gone, it's going to become a ghost town, and the silver seeds, the flying saucers, are going to come and pick up the chosen ones, which is what we call the abductees, the chosen ones, and they're going to take them to another planet. So I saw these lyrics, and this is basically what experiencers, 39% of all experiencers talk about being on board the ship, and they're shown this, what they call the screen. And they have these environmental devastating pictures on the screen, and they try to impress upon us the fact that we're messing up the world. So Neil Young writes this song, and then a bunch of other experiencers start to sing this song, like Patti Smith, who is one of the first singers on Saturday Night Live, wrote the song Gloria. And there's a whole list of them, and they all started singing this song After the Gold Rush, almost like it was calling to them to sing this song. So that's what sort of got me going down this rabbit hole. And as I went down and started looking at all this stuff, I suddenly realized, in fact, at one point I thought they had every single musician. I thought every single lead singer for every single band had been encountered UFOs or was an experiencer, an abductee. And I don't think people can even begin to understand how many rock stars, how many musicians either have believe they come from another planet, have had UFOs over their concerts, have had UFO sightings, have had offers of UFO TV shows, how many have written UFO songs, and most importantly, how many are experiencers. I have about three dozen that I list in my music book, which hasn't, it's been done for maybe 6 months, but the cover is not done. But I have probably three dozen major musicians who openly state that they're experiencers, or that strongly indicate or state they're experiencers, that they've been on board a ship or this sort of stuff. And some of the names would probably surprise a lot of people.
We'll hopefully have a chance to get some of those names presented or revealed as the show proceeds here. We'll circle back to that point here almost certainly. Try to do that. In the meantime, yeah, you really hit on a lot of points there. this business of the screen appearing in the course of these abductions that's, as you say, often talked about, and appearances of UFOs over concerts. I know there was a Springsteen concert a few years ago where a UFO was videotaped, and I don't think it was, might have been a fraud, I suppose. I myself don't put a lot of faith in any videos or photographs, unfortunately, whether they're real or not, just because of the way technology is these days. But Ozzy Osbourne, of course, there was another famous incident there in Chicago, I think, that was covered in the UFO Hunters series with Bill Burns. Who was this movie? I'm not sure. I'm assuming you can talk about it. Was it Chris Bledsoe that this big movie is going to be made about?
Yeah, it was Chris Bledsoe, and what happened was Warner Brothers, there was a religion professor at University of North Carolina was an advisor to the movie Conjuring, which did about $900 million at the box office. And the two scriptwriters, she contacted the two scriptwriters, and then, I never remember his name. He did Signs, and he did Passion of the Christ. Mel Gibson. So Mel Gibson was told about this story, and it's a very, very bizarre story. So Mel Gibson actually wanted to do the story, and he wanted to play the lead role for Chris Bledsoe in this movie. And so what they did was, through the scriptwriters, Chad and Carrie Hayes, sent a message to Chris Bledsoe and said, Warner Brothers was thinking of doing this movie. Can you get a sign from the beings or the aliens or whatever that we should do the movie? And the very next day, he lives in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It had been raining for 2 days. Suddenly, the backyard, the tree starts burning. It has a sort of a place where the branch is broken off, and the inside of the tree is on fire, going up through the middle of the tree, coming out the top of the tree in one spot where branches were broken. And they had a hose, they had a garden out there, so they put the hose up into the tree, and they managed to get this fire out. This happened at 9 o'clock. The kids were videotaping this with an iPad. 11 o'clock at night, the tree starts on fire again. They managed to put the fire out again by sticking this hose up inside soaking the inside of the tree. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, Chris Bledsoe's wife, Yvonne, was up, and she was out, and she said the tree's burning again. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, she's out there with the hose putting this fire out again. And nothing happened to the tree. The tree's still fully alive, but the inside of this tree is completely burnt out. So Chris mentioned this to the scriptwriters, and they said, thank you, that's what we want. And they basically decided they were going to do the movie. They were going to throw $80 million at the movie, and they were going to have Julie Roberts was going to play this religion professor. They had some big names. And then what happened is Chris wouldn't sign off on the end of the movie. They wanted total control of the end of the movie. And he said, no, that's not going to happen because, as I mentioned, he mentioned this, what he called, he calls the lady. She had given this environmental message about what was going to happen, and this was the message he used to bring to the world. That's why this happened to him, and he was not going to allow them to turn it into an evil alien movie. So they went through the lawyer three times, and in the end, Chris would not sign off on the end of the movie, and it was dropped. But now, apparently, Steven Spielberg and maybe picking this up. So,
how about that? Travis Walton is a good example of the way that Hollywood sometimes, or maybe even more often than not, takes these stories, any kind of story really, and twists them and in a way that really leaves people scratching their heads, especially the people that have experienced these things directly. Travis, I guess, has complained more than once. Mm-hmm. The way that Fire in the Sky was put together, they really kind of it was not as accurate as it could have been.
Yeah, and that's what happens. I mean, they'll give you $1.5 million to sign off on the movie, but after that, I mean, you basically are at their mercy as to how they want to do it. And that's the way movies sell. Unless you have some sort of adversarial situation in a movie, people aren't interested. You want the good guys versus the bad guys, and the good guys win. And that's the way these movies always unravel. And Chris knew this was going to happen. And I was actually in a meeting with him in Pennsylvania with a bunch of high-level business guys. I was the only guy in the room who didn't have any money, but they were basically advising him as to, you know, what to take and take the money up front and how the movie business worked and what to watch out for and stuff. And he's just a, you know, he's a big businessman. He was doing houses. He was doing $20 million a year building houses, had chronic Crohn's disease, which he was cured of when he had his experience, and never taken a pill since that day. But he was still a little guy who didn't know how Hollywood worked. He, you know, lived growing up in Fayetteville, still lived on the same property he grew up on and stuff like that. And you can't really blame Hollywood because they're just trying to make money. It's just Chris would not allow them to control the movie. So
How about that? We've got actually Angel Espino from PSN Radio. I'm not sure if you've done any interviews with him or not, but we had been kind of looking around for potential co-host or someone to ride shotgun up in the crow's nest for today's episode, and he's just dropped by actually here on Skype. We might be adding him to the conversation here. You know, we've gone close to 20 minutes as it is, and we really haven't, although in the lead up, the introduction of things, we did present a bit of a biographical overview and sketching out your personal history and whatnot, as far as things like Charlie Red Star and your involvement over the past 40 some years, I'm guessing. 42, yeah. I suppose, if you do the math, once again, with the Disclosure Project and presidential end of things. I'm not even sure if we really want to go there right now because of time constraints. I think you're a well enough known personality that people can, they can easily get up to speed on your credentials and whatnot if they do have any concerns or wondering if to just hoping to get clear on things. Is there anything more that you'd like to add to just as far as your background and whatnot, as far as all of that goes before we move on here? I want to start talking a little bit about Elvis, if we could, in just a second.
Yeah, no, I gave the background. Basically, they really need to know how I got into the music thing, because, as I said, my mother is a church organist for 40 years. My sisters played in a religious group that toured the country. My father was a pilot for the government, but built theater organs in his spare time. So my whole family was very, very musical, and I wasn't. So this is kind of unusual that I get, I think on purpose, I was sort of, whatever forces are behind this dragged me down into this. And now I'm working on my second music book. There's just so much material that there's a second music book coming out now.
I'm sorry, now I'm not sure what second book, if you're talking about the book that was written. The author now, of course, a former friend of yours, has passed away. Is it Michael, maybe Michael Luckman? Just trying to go through my show notes here. It's the Aliens and...
Yeah. Alien Rock, it's called, And he wrote the book. So once I got into it, then I discovered that he had written this book. And he was actually, when he died... And this would be about, well, maybe 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. He was working on a second book. When he heard that I was working on a book, then he said, well, I've got all these new cases and I'm going to do a second book. And I really don't know what happened to that second book manuscript, because he'd been working on it for quite a while. And he was actually even going to run a concert, a UFO Woodstock, which was going to be held in Malibu, California, because if you know the story, Malibu, there was these sounds that were heard below the ocean there, and a lot of people thought it was a UFO base or whatever, and they had taken these sounds and they had given them to a guy by the name of Merrill Frankhauser, who was a surf rocker guy out of musician out of Hawaii, and he was the guy that wrote the original Wipeout song in the 1960s. That was grabbed by another band and produced whatever. But anyway, so he had produced this music. So they were going to have this concert where these sounds were. And they were going to have Merrill Frankhauser. They were going to have David Bowie, possibly the Rolling Stones, a whole bunch of musicians. And Michael Luckman was a producer in New York City. He was friends with Michael Jackson and people like that. And he was doing this. And then the whole thing sort of fell apart. And I've talked to Merrill. This is still a possibility. It's just you need a producer to actually pull this thing off. So we're looking still at Malibu or in Toronto, Canada, to pull off this UFO Woodstock, because there's enough musicians, I think, that would show up for this type of event that are experiencers to do like a Woodstock type event.
I just found out last night, it sounds like Merle Haggard, who just recently passed away. He, for a number of years, I'd imagine, didn't really get too much into the details, but apparently had produced something along those lines with more of a country flair, of course. Country kind of UFO festival. So have you heard anything about that? Or?
Yeah, I think that was in Roswell. It may have been with another country guy. Willie Nelson, I think, may have been with him. Willie Nelson plays a lot with Merrill Frankhauser. So, again, there's so many of these. Like, a lot of these, what I'll do is when, like, for example, when you mention Woody Guthrie, what I basically do is that's how these leads start. So someone says, okay, wrote a UFO song. Then I go and I start searching. And basically what I find out is that he's had UFO sightings, and then you find out that he's, you know, had little beings he saw when he was a kid and stuff. And that's where all these things come. It's just backtracking through the songs. And so there's a lot of names that I haven't even gone through. Like, people send me this stuff all the time. And I've just finished a book on disclosure, and I did a book on this creativity thing with all sorts of other downloads to different stuff. So I haven't really been working on the music that much in the last, say, 6 or 9 months. I've been working on these other books. There's a lot of stories I haven't even gone through, that there's just so many stories of musicians. And it may be that musicians really don't care what people think. For example, I was giving a lecture when people say, it's just musicians, and, you know, everybody has those experiences. I was giving a lecture to a top golf club where Bubba Watson golfs out of in Scottsdale, Arizona. My friend set me up there, and there's a big fight where they were going to let me lecture there. And so they finally allowed me to lecture there. So I said, well, I'll get a UFO sighting or an abduction from some famous golfer. I went in there. I could not find a single golfer who had a UFO sighting or had had a, except for Jackie Gleason, UFO sighting or an experience or was an abductee or whatever. And musicians, as I said, at one point I thought they had every major lead singer for every major rock. It was just unbelievable how many were either writing songs or talking about their experiences or indicating through their music that they were, they'd had more than just a sighting.
Good old-fashioned investigative journalism. Sounds like you're quite committed and very passionate about that whole business, and it's proven to be quite effective. It's paid off for you in many ways here, too, of course. So that's great. As far as golfing and Gleason is concerned, just a bit of a side note, apparently he was a longtime FBI asset as well, ratting out a lot of his fellow stars in Hollywood, unfortunately. So on top of that, it's well known and widely discussed within the ufological world of ufology, that he, of course, and we don't really have time right now to get into the whole matter, but I'm sure you're quite up to speed on his experience there as far as the alien bodies and visiting with Nixon, supposedly showing him these, gaaining access to a military base down in Florida and whatnot. So his house even, I guess, was designed the shape of a UFO, was it not?
Yeah, and he had one of the biggest collections of UFO books around. I think the University of Manitoba here actually even bought his collection of UFO material. He was fascinated right from the 1950s. He was appearing on radio talk shows in the 1950s talking about his UFO experiences. And I actually was the one that set up the interview with his second wife, Beverly Gleason, who described this whole story that he had been to see the bodies and stuff like that. And she said he was either going out with some woman and trying to hide something, or it actually happened, because she said he was very, very shaken when he told her the story. And then he was very upset that she had told the story, that she had she was trying to push a book, and so she had put the story out, and he was very upset that she had actually gone public with the story.
Although it is rumored as well that on his with his last movie project with Tom Hanks, that he, and this is one of the things I was talking about actually with Johnny just in the lead up to today's show, that he was more than happy to share who knows what he was talking about exactly, but he was going on it to some extent regarding UFOs and aliens and what sort of intimate details he was providing cast and crew is anyone's guess, but
I hadn't heard.
Oh yeah, okay. So let's really kind of get into things here now. We got not quite an hour left here, and I think I'd really like to see if we can rip through things here and hit on a few of these big names. So Elvis Presley, that's probably about as good a place as any to really dive into things here. The day or evening he was born, I guess, it all kind of started back then, did it not?
Yeah, there was the blue light over the house that his father reported, and blue lights are always associated with a number of UFO experiences. So he had that. He had a sighting with his father. He had a sighting with his hairdresser, the guy did his hair. There was a lot of sightings around Elvis Presley, and blue is always like he wrote Blue Suede Shoes and Blue Hawaii, and he lots of blue references, which a lot of people sort of made reference to the fact that blue is a key word sort of in the UFO community as well. But he had a number of sightings, and really again, like Jackie Gleason had a huge collection of not just UFO but paranormal type books, very interested in the whole paranormal phenomena, although he died before the story sort of broke, like in terms of the connection between UFOs and aliens. So These are stories that people are pulling out of history, but yes, he definitely did have a number of UFO sightings and didn't really hide it.
Witnesses to this blue light, the evening of his birth, were said to have been his father, Vernon Presley, and the doctor who delivered both him and his stillborn twin, Jesse Guerin.
There's always a story, I mean, the Moody Blues is the biggest one that tells the story, that the aliens are actually encountering various people to put lyrics into songs, or that they're guiding certain people to do certain things, or that people make pre-birth agreements to do this kind of stuff. And the Moody Blues clearly described this and sold whatever 70 million or 50 million albums or whatever. They're big in the UFO community because of the type of music they play and the lyrics that they put out. But they had an encounter with Colin Andrews, who is the top guy for crop circles in the world. And Colin had five different musicians come to him after big lectures that he gave. And the Moody Blues was one. And they said, we want to talk to you after your lecture. So they went out for dinner. And Colin said it went back and forth between Pinder, who is the lead singer, and the lead guitarist. And they were going back and forth. And they were describing the fact that before they were born, they were in a room with some elder-type beings. And they were told that they were going to be musicians and they were going to put lyrics into songs. And then the lead guitarist said, oh, tell them how we came back in the earth. Tell them how we came back to that black hole. And Colin said, you could tell they were making this story up because it was going back and forth. And they were both telling this story and they were all excited. Sort of one of the stories that comes out with musicians is that a lot of them are picked to put lyrics to raise consciousness, because that's what Pinder had said. And he even said it publicly on the record, that there are lyrics in the songs that came from somewhere else.
Indeed. A lot of it seems to all lead back to this business of consciousness, whatever that really boils down to, is, who knows, some sort of cosmic energy, I would imagine. We got close to 10 people, 9 to be exact, is what we're seeing here, following things live as we stream via YouTube, episode 59 of Pi Radio Podcasts, here with our feature guest, renowned Canadian ufologist Grant Cameron. A lot of questions coming in via the YouTube chat area, so we'll set those aside for the moment. We're not quite into the Beatles. They'll be coming up here in a few minutes, I'd imagine. But in the meantime, we've also have another guest that's joined us here on board. It looks like we've got PSN Radio's Angel Espino has dropped by and come on board the Robin Hood. Actually, speaking of which, Grant, we're going to have to ask you a quick little pirate story. Is a tradition here before we actually are able to board the ship. Angel, thanks for dropping by. I guess you were going to ask an Elvis story, or you were going to bring that whole business of Elvis up, and then...
You read my mind. It's like we're in synchronicity with each other here, because I was about to say, you know, Elvis had, you know, scenarios where it leads to possible alien abduction or possibly alien encounters, and as soon as I thought it, you said it, and I was like, okay, I got to just stay muted. Good job. Grant, by the way, I haven't talked to you in almost a year now. Last time you were on Skywatchers was May of last year.
Well, have to do it again.
Yes, sir, definitely. It's always a pleasure to hearing your voice and speaking to you, sir.
Good to talk to you.
So, feel free just to add what you can there in the side chat, the text area there, Angel. And definitely we'll have you jump in there from time to time, as well as maybe let's just quickly check back on Johnny Webb up there.
I just want to drop this real quick, because I mean, you guys hit on something that it's something that I've been talking about even on the Skywatchers for months and months and months now, about this conditioning that's going on, and I believe Hollywood plays a big part in that, and is a cosmic conditioning to the realization that we're not alone. Jackie Gleason, Elvis Presley, all these big wig, you know, Hollywood figures all play their part, and I do believe there is a cosmic conditioning that's been going on to have us accept this reality, and I think that's the bigger picture here, guys.
After the gold rush,
yep.
Maybe, you know, as Grant's hitting on there. So, Johnny Webb, we've been covering a lot of ground here. Does anything quickly that really kind of jumps out at you that you'd like to address?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Grant. Good evening, Grant. With the ufology, obviously with supernatural stuff going on as well, do you feel that supernatural plays a role in ufology from a spirit level, from maybe a conscious level? Do you find that the demonic over dimensions, do you come across that part of it at all with your research?
Absolutely. That's the where I want to go. I want to get out of the disclosure stuff. And I had, as I said, I had this consciousness download, and it had to do with consciousness, the fact that consciousness is the basis of this whole thing, because I've been looking since 1975 to answer, what did I see in 1975? And when that happened to me, I had my answer. It is basically the fact that we aren't really going to be talking about extraterrestrials. We're going to be talking about ultra-terrestrials. We're going to be talking about something that is much more complex than ETs. It's much less physical than people think it is, and it's going to be much more spiritual than people think it is. And that just annoys scientists because they have this view of the world is a random, meaningless universe and stuff, and that's the people that are going to be most offended by what's going to be found here, because I can almost guarantee you that it's going to be much more than ETs, and people don't believe it. If you get a long-time experiencer, someone who claims they've interacted with the beings, ask them, as I did to Betty Andreasen and a lot of other people. Betty Andreasen had her first sighting in 1946. Her husband had his first experience in 1946, and they had one particular alien that they dealt with their entire life. And I said, Betty, you were about 8 years old when this happened. You're now like 80 years old. I want to ask you, did the alien that you dealt with all your life, did it ever get any older? And she said, no, it didn't. But aliens live a long time. Everybody will say the same thing. The alien never gets any older. And the question is, is that because aliens don't get any older? Which I say no, because if there's gravity in this part of the universe, there'd be gravity in that part of the universe. If there's stars in this part, there'd be stars. There's the rules go through the universe. So it indicates that may not even be an alien. And a number of people, experiencers, have actually asked, and the aliens have actually said, no, we're just putting on, this is a screen image type thing. And the number one reported being seen on ships is not an alien, it's not a gray, it's a ball of light. And the question is, so if it's a ball of light, does a ball of light eat bacon, eggs, toast, and coffee every morning? I guarantee you, it's going to be a much more parapsychology type thing. In fact, the CIA uses the word phenomenology. The last 2 days before Barack Obama left, they dropped these 12 million pages of documents. It involved not just UFOs, but remote viewing. It's all connected. Psychic phenomena is connected. It's all the same thing. It's this paranormal thing. And that's what I said earlier in the show, that the big story the CIA is trying to put out right now is the story of the portal. And the portal will describe that it's not like Star Wars where we get, a big huge ship and we get it going up to the speed of light. It's beings that will pop in and out of, come from this part of the universe, go into that part of the universe, that you can actually just like entangled particles move through the universe instantaneously, that it's not going to be very physical at all. And that was the download I got, that it's all consciousness. And it's been confirmed by the Canadian government, who said mental phenomena was involved in 1950. The former president of Penn State University told us, unless you understand about ESP and how it works, you will not be taken in by the control group that runs the UFO situation. And Ben Rich, who was the president of Lockheed Skunk Works, it's always been rumored to do the back engineering, when he was asked, how do they get here, how does the propulsion system work, said, what do you know about ESP? And the present top scientist for Lockheed Skunk Works, when Tom DeLonge, the famous rock musician, talked to him, he said that's all the scientists wanted to talk about was consciousness. Consciousness is the basis of this whole thing, and it's going to be ultra-terrestrials. It's going to be almost like a spirit-type phenomena rather than extraterrestrials. There is an extraterrestrial connection to it, but it's much more complex than little aliens flying around in tin cans.
It's interesting you say that, because one of my very first interviews was with a guy called Ron Gardner. He's a sort of respected guy. He wasn't sort of in deep, like Lockheed Skunk Works or anything like that, but he was a researcher. And he told me, very similar to you, he used to talk about J-Rod, who he said was one particular military base, and they were using him to train them. And it was because, when I first got involved with this, it was back in the early 90s, I'd watched the very first internet in Europe coming through, and I was getting UFO reports that were talking about Robert, Bob Lazar, and him talking about working in the center part of this, what he called a Sportster craft model. With that, the chairs inside this craft were so tiny, it was for little people. It wasn't for the average size, 6 foot military guy. It was for small people. And so what Ron Gardner was emphasizing was that the J-Rod was talking to him about mentally moving it, not physically. Like you said, there's no yep. moving parts. It's all about consciousness and yep. being able to OAB.
Well, it can be something similar to what we're seeing now with folks that are handicapped and they're using their mind and their brain waves to control computers. It could be something very similar to just that. And it doesn't really have to be spiritual in a sense.
Familiar with a Monitalk program out of New York there a few years ago. They were talking about taking children, vagrants in mm-hmm. the best cases for them, but children and getting them to have this sort of out-of-body experience where they were literally doing dimensional wars or battles in other dimensions through OAB, out-of-body experiences, you know? So it seems like this, you know, transfer of dimensional space, being here in the third dimension and possibly dream-stating into the fourth dimension, and then that being a very real existence like it is here, just like you turn the radio on and there's another channel, but the other channel's still in existence.
Yeah. If you look at the free survey, which is 4,000 experiencers, of the people who answered the question, 14% of the experiencers have made claims that they were allowed to fly the ship. I ran into my first woman who told me this in 2013. I thought she was nuts. She was in her 70s. She told me that. And so, of course, I said to her, they let you fly the ship? Are you kidding me? And she said, yeah, I've flown three different models. And, of course, what a question can you ask? Well, how do you fly a ship? And she said, you do it with your mind. And if you talk to Chris Bledsoe, if you ever interview Chris Bledsoe, ask him, how do you fly a ship? He's flown it a number of times. He'll tell you exactly how it's done. I've got 36 people that I've encountered now who will say, I've flown the ship. And I say, hang on, let me ask you a question. How do you fly the ship? Nobody has said anything different. Everybody says the same thing. You fly it with your mind. The ship is alive. You become one with the ship. And as Chris Bledsoe describes to me, you look out through the clear glass or whatever. You look at a cloud and you say, I'd like to go to the cloud. And the cloud instantly comes to you. And you can move from point to point in space just by your thought, whatever your thought is. And I even show in my lectures, I show this whole idea of how the technology is starting to catch up. And people will say, well, maybe it's not spiritual, but it is spiritual because you always got to say, who's making the brainwaves? So what I show in White World Technology from 2004, University of Southern Florida, I show them taking 20,000 neurons of a rat brain. And they take them and they put them in a Petri dish. They wire electrodes into the bottom of the Petri dish and they hitch it up. And you can look up, all you got to do is Google search rat brain F-22 flight simulator. You look it up and you'll see that they actually have 20,000 neurons of a rat brain flying an F-22 simulator side to side, up and down. And then once they get it to learn how to fly the fighter jet, then they change the weather and they got the worst weather, thunderstorms and stuff. And the thing continues to fly the ship. So we're talking just 20,000 neurons. We have 100 billion neurons. So you can imagine the technology, but everybody says the same thing. Nobody has said anything different. Everybody says, you do it with your mind. The craft is alive. You become one with the craft. And then you have experiencers like Chris Bledsoe who will say, after that point, the first time you fly the craft, whenever the craft is in the vicinity, you know the craft is there because you've got this sort of connection to the craft and you can actually sense it's actually in the area. So there's this very great connection. And Dr. Eric Walker was the first, I didn't even understand, 1991 we did this interview already. He said, unless you understand about ESP and how it works, you will not be taken in. This is the guy who was the chairman of the board of the Institute for Defense Analysis, the top military think tank in the United States. He had 14 honorary doctorate degrees. He was Penn State University president. He had done engineering studies for Eisenhower. He's a high-level guy who basically told us, and I didn't understand until I had this download experience, where it said, no, this is consciousness. The basis of the universe is not matter. It's consciousness. If you take a look at the dual slit experiment that was done 100 years ago, you do not have a particle take a position in time and space until there's an observer. Until there's an observer, it stays in a quantum wave potential. So consciousness is primary, matter is secondary. And that's the answer to the whole problem.
Maria Pia in the YouTube streaming chat stating that Bob Lazar was her aha moment. So one of the questions I've got for you here, Grant, is regarding consciousness, but in particular the impact that psychedelics and various other drugs, narcotics of whatever kind you can possibly imagine, but those that more particularly tend to impact consciousness directly, like the magic mushrooms, LSD and whatnot. Musicians are well known, not all of course, but it is a common part of within the culture. How does that tie into things like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and so forth, this higher altered consciousness, and the way that perhaps in doing this you're opening the doors of perception? Exactly. What do you think's behind all of that?
You nailed it. That's what you do, is you open the, as Huxley said, there's a filter, and psychedelics opens the filter. So when I wrote the book, Inspired, the Paranormal World of Creativity, I look at all sorts of different things. I look at psychedelics. I look at savants who have left brain damage. I look at musicians who are all right brain creative people. All experiencers are, most of them are right brain creative people. All implants. This was told by Roger Lear, who was the guy who did all the alien implant removals in Los Angeles. He did about 17.
He just recently died, yeah.
Rest in peace.
And he was asked, what's the common thing about all the experiencers that you've dealt with, he said two things. Number one, they're all right-brained, creative people. And number two, all implants are on the left side of the body. And so if the implants are on the left side of the body, that means whoever's putting the implants in is targeting the right brain, because the right brain runs the left side of the body. The right brain is the musician brain. When they're taking psychedelics, they open this thing, but musicians are already very right-brain, creative people, and those are the people who have the downloads, those are the people that make the discoveries. There's even a study that showed that very smart people are not very creative. There was a study of 1,500 kids with 130 IQs that was done out of California starting in 1915 and just ended. It was like almost a 100-year study, and of all the kids, the 1,500 kids, there was almost no creative kids in these very highly intelligent kids, and there was two Nobel Prize winners in that area outside of San Francisco where this study was done, and they missed them both in this study. So musicians are right-brained. They're very sort of creative, and LSD has been used to open up this filter, not only with music, but it was actually being used by Hewlett-Packard to invent things in the 1950s. The guy that invented the computer, December 1950, had the download, and he didn't do the demonstration. He's the guy that invented the mouse, invented the interactive screen. They had a computer at Berkeley and then a computer at another university linked up in 1968. It was called the mother of all demos. He had the download that popped into his head in 1950. He was doing LSD, and a number of people have actually stated, and I would back them, that if it were not for LSD, there would be no computers, because the vast majority of all the computer stuff that was invented was done within 5 miles of Stanford University in Silicon Valley area, where LSD was. All the money for computers was at MIT. MIT did not break it. It was all done. And if you take a look at the people who did virtual reality, the guy that holds the patent for that said virtually everybody that was working on virtual reality was doing acid by Hewlett-Packard and a number of different people in the 1950s and 60s for creativity.
We have, sorry to interrupt you there, Jeff, but here in London we have Sega Games. They were big on the game consoles a few years ago. They only employed people that had autism. That was their policy.
Yeah. And all autistic or all savants have left brain damage. So their left brain, the rational analytical brain, the ego brain, that when you're meditating, you're trying to shut that voice down. That's what it is. Meditation is the same thing. Hypnosis is the same thing. It's shutting the left brain. Joe McMonagle, who was the top remote viewer, and 001, the top guy that they had, he said, they asked him, how does it work? He said, you've got to shut down the ego mind. If you can shut down the left brain, you can pop into that world, and all the information is there. If you take a look at the experiencers who have filled out the free survey, 40% of all experiencers say at some point during their experience they knew the answer to everything in the universe. All the information is out there, and it's like, Johnny, you mentioned, it's like tuning into a radio station, and some psychics can tune into the radio station better, some meditators can tune in better, and if you can shut down the left brain, activate the right brain that musicians are doing, you can pop in, and you can get people like Dylan and all these people where they ask, like, where did this song come from? And Dylan said, like, blowing in the wind, in under 10 minutes, he said, I have no idea where it came from, I have no idea, just popped into my head. I have 150 songs that people got in under 10 minutes, and these are some of those famous songs of all times, where the musician said, I had no idea. It came, and I'm almost embarrassed to take the royalties. It just popped into my head. I didn't do any work. It just came like yesterday. He got up in the middle of the night. It was so clear. Paul McCartney was walking around for weeks after he wrote Yesterday, asking people, have you heard this song? Have you heard this song? He was convinced somebody else had written it. He could not believe that this had popped into his head so clearly.
John Lennon, Neil Young, a couple of others, of course, too, that where you find that sort of thing happening. It's a pretty common occurrence with a lot of, you know, artistic, creative, and musical type persons. So let's just bring in things back around full circle to Elvis. We kind of got on a bit of a tangent there with things, but there was another encounter, apparently, Grant, that I was hoping to ask you about, this Bel Air UFO witnessing or appearance that he experienced. Do you know anything about that? His home that Southern California.
No.
It's where he had the hosted the Beatles back in 1965. They came and they the King held court with the Beatles. You don't know about that one?
No, I've never heard that. No, I've heard that. Never heard that story.
Well, there you go.
I'll look it up. And what was supposed to have happened there?
Well, what happened was he was there with one of maybe one or two of his Memphis Mafia guys, and he was there outside in the yard, and there was a craft that kind of slowly came. It was kind of rather considerable size as well, and it just kind of slowly came drifting over. Elvis ended up, I guess, chasing the damn thing. down the road, and then he came back after a few minutes, so who knows if it was the real Elvis after that or not, but I don't think he was gone for too long. It's something you might want to look into for sure. It's a really interesting
I recall it. It's in Michael Luckman's book, that story.
Right.
That's only, one of many. If you take a look at John Lennon's sighting, much more dramatic. And John Lennon's talked about it. He's actually on video talking about this thing where he's with May Pang. He's broken up with Yoko Ono. He's living with May Pang. And I think it happens at May Pang's apartment. John Lennon's naked. He's standing on the balcony up on the penthouse. And she's in the shower and he's yelling. He said he didn't have his glasses on. It was so close that he could see it clearly without his glasses on. He's yelling, "Mate, come out, come out, yeah." And she comes out. So they're both naked. They're standing on the balcony. And she's trying to photograph this thing. She said it was for 10 minutes. This thing was floating around. He said he could hit it with a brick. It was that close. And then it went down the East River, turned at the UN, and headed off. Later, like John mentioned it in one of his albums, "I saw something strange in New York City." It was in one of his songs. And May Pang did a number of interviews later where she talks about what's known as the Oz effect, where people will describe going down the LA freeway with all the traffic and suddenly all the traffic is gone. It's just them and the UFO. So that's what she described. She said the strangest part of the whole sighting was that there was a balcony going down to the balcony below them. And she said there's people were always on that balcony and they were yelling and screaming. This went on for 10 minutes, and she said they didn't come up. She couldn't believe that they wouldn't come up onto their balcony to see why they were yelling and screaming. And she said the other weird thing was that everybody in the apartments that they could see looking out over New York City, everybody in the apartments was gone. There was nobody home. And she said it. Oh, and then I realized it was Friday night. This idea came in her head. It's Friday night. Everybody's gone to the Hamptons. So we actually contacted May Pang, and we said, "Do you not think that's kind of strange that everybody went to the Hamptons?" And she said, "Yes, I know it was very strange." So she realized this Oz effect, that people who are abducted have this experience where it's just you and the UFO and everybody else is gone and you're cut off. There was this story, we could never confirm it, but John had said when he was young that he had been abducted. So I was pretty well convinced that John Lennon, that was not just an ordinary sighting. There may have been an abduction take place there.
And as Joe Aminon has hit on here in the YouTube chat area, this whole business of the Flaming Pie, this is how, of course, that John came up with the name for the Beatles. It was the man, Beatles with an A, I think is what the man on the Flaming Pie said. So, and yeah. Paul McCartney, back in the mid-90s, I guess it was, actually put an album out called Flaming Pie. So,
yeah. And they put out a, when I demo, you can find this on the internet, you look up Ringo Starr's 1974 album, and the name's going to escape me now, they do a commercial. He and John actually do a commercial for Goodnight Vienna. And if you look it up on the internet, it's a 1 minute commercial and John and him are talking and Ringo actually gets into a flying saucer that lands in the middle of the street and he flies up above Los Angeles and he ends up on top of the RCA building and he gets out of the flying saucer and he's waving to everybody. The Beatles were pretty much into UFOs. They were, and Ringo talked
and about LSD, it. By the way, and major drugs. I mean, they were all into that culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is they were sort of opened up. They said, the deeper you go, they had that expression about the drug thing that, you actually learn more the deeper you go and all this kind of stuff. But all the musicians were sort of, they were rebels and they had sort of the spiritual aspect that they got through the psychedelics plus the UFO stuff. But you take a look at, like, for example, the head of Kiss, and Ace Frehley. I mean, he talks very openly about his abduction experience. I mean, he said, I woke up one day in the doorway. And I was half in the doorway and half outside the doorway. And he said, I've woken up in a lot of weird places in my life. And that was the weirdest. That one took the cake. And he said, as soon as it happened, he said, I suddenly started thinking about alien abduction. That there was a dream and it was more than a dream. And he goes to the shower and he's checking his body for, marks.
Scoop marks.
Scoop marks and stuff like that. And he said he couldn't find any. And then he goes in the backyard and he sees a 27-foot circle burnt into his backyard. And that's his lucky number. And you get guys like of that caliber talking about this kind of stuff. And a lot of them were very open about their experiences.
Sammy Hagar.
You're reading my mind. I was about to say, Sammy Hagar. And there you go.
Yeah.
Never mind.
We can get into his whole thing just in a minute here with the nine and whatnot. But before, let's not leave, if we could finish up with the business of Lennon, because This is one of the things. I know that, Johnny, you had Uri Geller on your show with Dr. J, and one of the questions that I wanted to have him respond to, which we didn't get a chance to do because it was pre-recorded, as I later found out, unfortunately, that Geller, of course, I'm sure Grant, he knows all about this whole story of the eggs that supposedly, and I think sometimes it's reported as just one, but I've come across other accounts where it's like two or three of these little strange, mysterious, oval-shaped colored eggs that Lenin supposedly gave to Geller just a few months before he was murdered. And this all ties into what you're kind of, this business of Ace Frehley and how he found himself just standing in the doorway, coming out of a trance and whatnot. Do you want to just share with listeners, if you would, Grant, how this all took place with, the eggs, coming from out of nowhere?
Well, the story Uri Geller tells is that he used to have coffee, and there's actually a picture of him. He lived in the same area of New York City as Lenin, and they would have coffee at this coffee shop in the back of some coffee shop or whatever. And he said that one day Lenin gave him this egg, this sort of a bronze-type egg, and said, "This may be my ticket to another planet, but I don't want it." And he tells the story of he wakes up in the middle of the night. Now we know this has the makings of an abduction experience. He says he looks and there's light coming from under the door, and he has the impression that there's a fire in the hallway. He tries to wake up Yoko Ono, and he can't wake her up. And that's very commonly described for people who have the beings in the room where they're trying to wake up their partner, and she couldn't wake her up. And then he said he goes to the door, and he opens up the door, and these effing bugs, he called them, these effing bugs are standing there. And he said the next thing he realized, he's on top of the bed covers in the morning, and then Yoko is awake, and he's got this egg thing. So he got it from these beings. He doesn't remember them giving it to him, but he gives it to Uri Geller. And, of course, there was a musician that came out and said, "Oh, this is a prop that's used by musicians." Of course, I contacted Uri, and I said, "Well, this guy's making this claim." I sent the article or whatever. I looked in the music books, or in the magic books, to try to find this prop, because he said that this is used. Now, I could not find any place anybody selling it looked like that. And he said, "I stand by my story." And he said, he originally told me, he said, I never had it checked, because I didn't want to find out it was made in Taiwan. Uri Geller told me that he keeps it on his person at all times. It never leaves his body. It's on his pocket or whatever. He never leaves. And so he answered me right away. He didn't delay. And so that's basically the story. Uri Geller standing by the story that John Lennon gave him this egg type object, that he still has it.
All right. We can follow up on these stories more in the Rogues Gallery too, whether Grant chooses to stick around for the exclusive premium end of things, the way that we package and produce things there with the after show or not. So we've covered John Lennon and Elvis, that's great, and the Flaming Pie story, Uri Geller. How about Mick Jagger and Marianne Faithfull? I guess there's a report that a story that they had seen, is it Glastonbury back in the late 60s, they saw something in the sky?
Yeah, they had sightings, but the sightings aren't as dramatic as the people who believe, like Bowie, for example. I mean, Bowie believed, as a 12-year-old, he believed that the aliens were following him around and studying him. Bowie actually edited a UFO magazine in the late 1960s in Great Britain. Bowie was really into this stuff. And then they have these bizarre synchronicity items that happen. Bowie played in a 1976 movie, and the name escapes me, but it was about an alien that comes to Earth.
The Man Who Fell to Earth. Thank you, Johnny Webb.
So he plays in this. Plus, he also plays in the 1983 movie The Hunger. And that movie, the book, is written by Whitley Strieber. And so he plays in a Whitley Strieber movie. And the thing is that Whitley Strieber doesn't realize he's been abducted till 1985. It is one of these bizarre synchronicities where you have all these musicians are ending up in these UFO movies or in movies that are based on books written by UFO people. And, for example, Jerry Garcia plays in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. People don't know that. He's in the India scene. You'll see the India scene. He's walking around with a headset and a boom mic. He's in this thing. So you have this bizarre deal where all these musicians end up in these UFO movies, or their songs end up in UFO movies. It's just so bizarre, these synchronistic things. Bowie was really, really heavily into this thing. Bobby Cartola, who did the original Coke commercial, he's a famous Canadian rock guy. Burton Cummings. And when I believe that all these musicians that they had every top one. The top band that came out of my city was the Guess Who, did American Woman, which was a song that came out of nowhere. It's a bizarre story. I won't get into it, where they got that song from. But Burton Cummings, I said, well, I wonder if Burton Cummings has been abducted. So I go and I start searching, and it pops up his Facebook page. And he's talking in capital letters, so he's yelling, and he's saying, you know, I don't really care what anybody's got to say. I'm 64 years old. I'll say whatever the hell I want to say. And he's going on, and he's talking about Whitley Strieber. They're mistreating this guy, and I know exactly how he feels. And I'm going, like, wow, it's just, like, so bizarre to see the number of musicians that are not just having sightings, like the Stones. Sheryl Crow, who sold 67 million albums, she wrote a story about being abducted. Dolly Parton wrote a song about being abducted. Sheryl Crow had to sleep with the lights on. A number of them will give that. Dave Davies from the Kinks.
Right.
Clear experiencer, you know, it's a long account of his abduction type experience. It just goes on and on. And of course, Tom DeLonge, Blink 182, has now become very famous by being contacted by the government. These 10 sources who are linking him all this kind of stuff, where he has his experience outside of Area 51. Perry Farrell, he's an experiencer, and I mentioned Ace Frehley. Jerry Garcia talks very clearly about this 2-day encounter where he was held sort of captive. Ellie Goulding, who wrote the song Lights, she has only one tattoo. It's a triangle. She sleeps with the lights on. She talks about lights turning people to the moon and stuff. It just goes on and on and on. There's just piles of these.
Sure. Did we lose you there, Grant? You're kind okay. You're just coming in and out there. A little bit of electrical kind of interference for whatever reason. So. Sheryl Crow, she wrote a book. Could you just quickly give us a thumbnail sketch of what that was all about?
Well, she didn't write a book. She wrote a song. Let me just get quickly the lyrics here. Hang on. Sheryl Crow, here's her song. I swear they're out there. I swear, I swear they're out there. I swear they're out there. I swear, maybe angels. Down here, I feel like a citizen of nowhere. My bags are all packed in case they ever come for me. Got 100 stories and tabloid lies. Got witnesses to what the government denies. I'm headed down to Roswell to wait and see. So these are the kind of songs that these people write.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at it and you say, like, there's no doubt. I mean, they sleep with the lights on, which is very common with experiencers, that they have to have the lights on and stuff like that. So that's her story. And, you know, where she says, she's going to Roswell. And Sammy Hagar, I mentioned. I'm just going through the Nina Hagen, who was a famous East German singer, actually went to Avant Smith for therapy. And I heard, I got it confirmed again, that Eric Clapton had gone to John Mack for therapy. And they're going to link me up with a guy who will actually allow me to quote him on that. And his son is Michael Lee Hill.
That's right.
He claims to be his biological son. Michael Lee Hill is about as open as experiencer as you can get. Al Jorgensen, Ministry, he talked about his wife actually having the child taken and stuff like that. Noddy Holder,
Ziggy Stardust too. I don't think the name has come up to this point, but that was a character that Bowie did play for a few years, which took on quite an extraterrestrial sort of out of this world sort of flair.
That's what made him famous. Yeah,
sure. You mentioned Hagar. We just kind of coming back around to that, and the Nine. That's quite a talking point there, of course, too, the way that the Nine figures into modern esoterica and occult lore. So sure. If you could just maybe speak to that a little bit, Hagar and the Nine.
Well, Hagar, I'm not really, it's probably in my book. I really follow that. But if you take a look at Uri Geller, was the Nine. That's where Uri Geller claimed that he had a encounter with aliens at 3 years old in the Israeli desert, and that's where he got his stuff. And the guy that wrote Star Trek?
Gene Roddenberry, sure. Yeah, that's right.
Roddenberry. Yeah. He was channeling an alien. And it was called, there was the Nine. It was Tom and the Nine. And then he wrote Deep Space Nine. Some of his channeling stuff has actually been recovered, where he actually had the channeling transcripts of what he was asking all these questions and stuff like that. So the Nine is very common in not just music, but in all sorts of other people using this encounter, whether, you know, it's like some UFO, top UFO people. That's a long story. I won't get into it with the remote viewing people. But they were also involved with this Nine thing. And Jet Propulsion Laboratory was involved. And they just pop up all over the place, especially in the 1970s.
Jack Parsons Laboratory, I think is what it's sometimes referred to as, or JPL, if I'm not mistaken. But let's see, you've written a book. I think you've written a few, actually. You keep referencing that. If we could just be clear so that people can know the title and maybe where to find it.
Okay, the one I'm sort of talking about tonight is called Inspired, the Paranormal World of Creativity. And it was originally started as the music book, but there was so much music stuff that I moved the music book separate. And so Inspired, the Paranormal World of Creativity, and it goes through the whole stories about all 7 books of Harry Potter were an instantaneous download. Wizard of Oz was an instantaneous download. I got 12 Nobel Prizes that came in dreams or in downloads. The invention of Google, the search engine came in a dream in the middle of the night. So I do all these different inspirations, and music is only one chapter. I do modern music and then I do ancient music, because when I first gave the lecture, I'm actually giving a lecture next Friday in Boulder, Colorado. When I first gave the music alien lecture, of course, somebody stands up at the end and says, no, this isn't aliens, this is the devil. And I go, are you serious? And yeah. And everybody was jumping on this thing about this is the devil and drugs and stuff like that. And so my mother was a church organist, so I actually went back and I started looking at ancient music. Like I looked Handel and Bach and, you know, all these guys. And it was the same thing, except they, instead of using the word aliens or spirits, they were using God or other dead musicians and stuff. It was exactly the same thing. They were claiming the same sort of inspirational download stuff back 300 years ago. So this is a process that's been going on for a long time, and aliens may not even be involved. That's where you start looking at it. Maybe it's just a higher spiritual force that will appear as fairies at one point in history, will appear as aliens now because we believe in aliens, and may change. Because if you look at the history of ufology, people always talk about the Greys, and I've been in this, you know, since about 5 years before Jesus was a carpenter, and I know that the Greys were not always around, that the Greys only sort of appeared in the mid-1960s when Betty and Barney Hill put their book out. Before that, they were all human type aliens, and you have these patterns almost as if they're changing from one pattern to another and doing different things. So,
Johnny, I guess you want to jump in there? You got something like that?
If you think of the Highlander, you know, in the movie, he was obviously like an immortal, and he traveled through time and changing his characters and things like that. I think that, like Grant saying, that the ufology, they get on that bandwagon of the favor of the time, you know, and they sort of implement whatever that looks like, you know?
Yeah. I've got an interesting story here, because you're in England there. Cat Stevens is one that people really don't know. Remember we mentioned before that people fly the ship with the mind? And Cat Stevens, yeah, before he became a Muslim, actually talked. He said, one night I was lying on my bed, and I saw this flying saucer shoot across the sky and stop over me, and it sucked me up into it. When it put me down, I shot up in bed. I knew it wasn't a dream. It didn't feel like a dream. It was real. I know it was real. So this happened in the early 1970s, and then he wrote 2 songs. One was called Longboats, which is about UFOs, and the other was called Freezing Steel. And so when I talk about consciousness, I always play part of Cat Stevens' song, Freezing Steel. He said, I was on the ship of freezing steel, the ship without the guiding wheel. And that was written in the 1970s. There is no steering wheel on a flying saucer. It's flown with the mind. And so Cat Stevens indirectly references this already back in the 1970s. So he was another one that is kind of a famous abductee, although now he really doesn't talk about it anymore.
Very cool. I wonder if we'd be able to actually play that song on our show here without having YouTube ding us for copyright. Probably not. So,
you just got the lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, we try to do a pretty extensive job with our show notes, definitely, with the post-production end of things. So, Angel, you want to jump in there? You got something you'd like to add to the conversation here?
Well, I wanted to ask Grant and the rest of the panel here if you are familiar with Valiant Thor from Venus, and what do you guys think of that story? Because, you know, you mentioned earlier how before the Greys were the standard, you know, known aliens, they were humans. Humanoid-looking, or very, very human-looking. And Valiant Thor fit that description. He was human-looking. Supposedly the story was that he came from Venus and he was working with the U.S. government. And this was back in the 1950s. Grant, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I can tell you an interesting story. What was the guy's name, the minister that was behind him?
Well, I don't know if Schneider spoke about him many years later and his involvement with the government.
Okay, but let me tell you the story. So, guy that's telling the story, he's a minister, and of course his name escapes me, but I have a book coming out in August which deals with my Charlie Red Star sightings in the 1970s.
Not Dr. Frank Strangis.
That's right. Dr. Frank Strangis.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Strangis tells this story, and I had the sightings in 1975. The guy who ran the airport where I had the sightings in Carmen, Manitoba, tells a story that Apollo 15 astronaut James Irwin came to Carmen and that he lectured at the high school. Bob didn't go to the lecture, but Bob Demert started rebuilding old World War II planes, like Japanese Zeros and stuff like that. And James Irwin was into this. So James Irwin, after the lecture, said, I'd like to go meet Bob Demert. I hear he lives in town. So he comes over, and Bob tells me the story. He says, we're in the hangar. James Irwin from Apollo 15 says to me, he says, his wife is in the hangar. He says, as soon as Elaine left the hangar, he said, James Irwin leaned over to me, and he said, Bob, I'm going to tell you something. If you ever repeat it, I'll deny I ever said it. He said, when we landed on the moon, there was a craft that landed about a mile away. And we radioed Houston, and we said, we've got something over there. It's landed. We want to take the rover, and we want to go over and investigate. And Houston came back and said, stand down, hang on. They came back on the air 30 seconds later, and they said, you're to go about what you're doing and ignore it. And Irwin said, told Bob Demert, my friend, when they left the moon, that thing was still sitting there. So that's the one story. Then Frank Stranges is telling the story. Suddenly I found out Stranges was going to have James Irwin at a conference. And that the day before, James Irwin had pulled out of the conference. So I phoned up Frank Stranges and I said, why did he pull out? And he said, phone me up. And he said, I'm giving the honorarium back. I cannot do this lecture. It's not worth my pension. They're after me. I can't talk. And I said to Stranges, I said, what was James Irwin going to talk to you about? And he said he was going to tell us what he saw on the moon.
Neil Armstrong, apparently, that was, I think, the same story where he switched over to, allegedly, to the medical channel for a couple minutes and shared information basically along those sort of lines, stating that they're here, they're big, they're out of this world, and they're watching us. Leaving him and, I guess, others with the impression that whatever was on the moon did not particularly want them visiting there at that time. So, but let's just, we're kind of speaking of time, we're about at the 90-minute mark here, and that's typically about as far as we like to run things with the main event here and main feature portion to the show, although there's a couple quick little points here. Maybe we'll have to save a little bit for the after show. If you care to join us, there's no obligation to be a part of things in the first place, but if you do drop by, you can also pop out whenever you like. Typically, we go for about an hour, but if you've only got like 15, 20 minutes, that's fine too. Kurt Russell, recently made a statement, which we're not, I guess you could get into that if you want, but also this business, of course, too, of Trump's potentially secret files, the way that with each incoming president, they are presented with a supposedly secret dossier, whether that's the case or not, who knows, although Trump apparently is very cool to the whole UFO issue, from what I can gather. But let me just ask you this. Here's a bit of a hardball or something from out of left field. Hopefully not anything too much that you're not able to handle. But why is it that MUFON never seems to want to comment on the John Ford case? Are you familiar with John Ford finding himself locked up as over the past 20 some odd years in the New York Suffolk County mental institution? So are you up to speed on his story at all? Or why is it that MUFON doesn't?
I sort of know. Well, MUFON wants to stay out of controversy. I mean, they figure that's not their thing. They've got their own problems now with Corey Good. They've got a real mess going with Corey Good at their next conference. So, I mean, they're basically, you know, want to stay with the sightings and try to stay out of the controversy. The same as the government wants to stay out of controversy. So they, anything that's a little bit touchy, I mean, it may be sensational for you and I and the National Enquirer to be handling, but if you're the person that whose ox is going to get gored, you don't want to deal with it. So they just push it to the side and pretend it didn't happen. And that's what they do with a lot of stuff. And every organization does the same thing.
That's really unfortunate because I've looked into the matter, and from what I can tell, he's been handed a pretty raw deal, unfortunately, and still finding himself institutionalized after 20-some-odd years. He got caught up in a lot of politics, is what it seems, and that combined with this whole business of UFO sightings, and then you have this illegal radioactive waste dumping in the Suffolk County region, and just quite a mess. He was actually running for political office at the time, too, so that's quite unfortunate. Do they have an official position on that, or they just completely ignore the matter altogether?
No, they would sort of know about the case, but there'd be piles of controversies of various researchers, you know, you're going to get into the, what's his name, the child pornography cases where people, various researchers get caught with various problems and stuff like that, where that's not their real issue, where they don't really want to deal with the personalities of the people who are doing investigations. They want to stick to the straight, you know, sightings and stay out of the controversy. They're having enough trouble just doing the sightings without getting into the politics of the thing. Because if you get into the politics of the thing, I mean, it can get really ugly. I mean, in terms of ufology, everybody's fighting all the time. And you know, you had even MUFON with one of their investigators was, you know, Army Intelligence. And there was all this stuff about whether they had sold the files to Bigelow and Bigelow infiltrated the organization and stuff like that. They've got so many skeletons in the closet that any organization does that it doesn't help the funding to bring up this kind of stuff and sort of air your dirty laundry. The same as the government will classify stuff that does dirty laundry and not allow it out.
For listeners who aren't aware, Bob Bigelow, of course, is the billionaire. I'm not sure how much of a philanthropist exactly, but investor, entrepreneur, futurist, visionary, what have you, but he's still technically in possession of the Skinwalker Ranch, which that has quite the story behind it. Unfortunately, we have no time whatsoever here left to get into things. So just quickly though, Corey Good, I've heard the name, but what are the details?
Well, I haven't really followed Corey Good, but he's one of the people that's backing the secret space program. And so there's been a big expose of him that, you know, he made up a bunch of stuff. And this is from one of the people from the Camelot, the original Camelot series, Ryan, whatever his name is. He did a big article about 3 days ago, and this is all over the internet now. And
he's with the Gaia Group, correct?
I'm not sure. Were you talking about the investigator or the Camelot was run by two people to start, and he was one of the original Camelot, and he had a number of conversations, and they've sort of done an expose on a bunch of things that Corey Good made up and stuff like this and conversations he had with people. And the thing is that he's the key speaker at the MUFON conference. So MUFON has gone to this, back the secret space program, which I say is total nonsense, and they've got all these speakers on this secret space program, and now they're going to be maybe eating this thing, because if this big expose that all these people are making this stuff up, and this is their main conference, these are their main speakers, this could get ugly for MUFON.
Absolutely. And just quickly then, going back to Kurt Russell, this just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact. I picked up on it in my Facebook newsfeed. Did you happen to see that as well, Grant?
I glanced at it.
He had remained anonymous up until just yesterday, supposedly, but he was in fact the unnamed pilot who called in during the Phoenix Lights affair stating that he had seen something quite dramatic. So, yeah, I guess you didn't really look into that too closely, though, to this point. So,
yeah, I can tell you Alice Cooper was somebody who witnessed the Phoenix Lights. He lives in Phoenix, and he actually has funded some UFO stuff. Secretly, he's very quiet about the whole thing, but Alice Cooper was one of the witnesses to the Phoenix Lights as well.
And a Christian on top of that, apparently, even though he for years has produced and been part of some pretty macabre yeah. You know, musical theatrics and opera and so forth. But, okay, guys, well, just Johnny and Angel, since we have you on board here, just quickly to wrap up, if you've got any last little closing comments or remarks that you'd like to pass on to or address Grant with, go ahead. Johnny, maybe you first, and then we can close with Angel, and then we can get, once again, just quickly, Grant's contact information, website details, and any upcoming events and all that kind of good stuff. Johnny, go ahead.
Yeah, I suppose I'd like to finish with, like, going back to consciousness that we started with. You know, I think consciousness is an evolving thing as well. It's speeding up, and people are taking on information a lot faster and quicker. And I wondered, do you think that we're pretty, they normally say we're 50, 60 years behind the military hardware of America's secret programs. Do you think that society is going to be jumping into that anytime soon?
I don't. There's a move, as I said, by the CIA at the present moment to move this idea of consciousness. And Tom DeLonge is also part of his message is this consciousness message. But it takes a while to filter down. It has to go through Hollywood. That's basically how they do it, is through entertainment.
Okay, Angel, anything that you haven't managed to share here that you'd like to...
He nailed everything pretty much at the end there with everything is going through, filtered through entertainment. I completely believe that. Yeah, we see that not only with ufology, but even politics. Yeah, you know, everything, you know, look at the way they're treating Trump, for example, through the entertainment sector. It's just crazy, but I do believe that everything is filtered through entertainment, like you're saying.
It's going to be $1 billion. That's one of the figures I've heard with the Tom DeLonge.
Wow.
Latest effort, $1 billion is going to be thrown at this thing.
I'm sorry, $1 billion into what exactly? The disclosure?
Into Tom DeLonge is going to make an announcement, I believe, on November the 16th. And it's backed by one of the richest people in the world. And they've raised all this money. And it's going to be this sort of a mega production, Steven Spielberg, bunch of episodes. They're going to run with all sorts of stories. And it's all going to be under the To the Stars, which is Tom DeLonge's media empire. And he wants to, it's like the Star Wars are going to sell toys and make this into a big thing. And he's going to control all this. But the figure I had heard was up to $1 billion is going to be thrown at various episodes and to put out these messages that they want out, like consciousness and aliens and Spielberg and J.J. Abrams was another... name.
Chris, you
sort
of demonic point to all of this, Grant, yourself?
I'm one of the people, and I'm taking the stand now. I say there are no evil aliens, there are no evil Jews, there are no evil races. There's no evil anything, and this is one of the big debates. It's going to be hardware versus consciousness. This is the battle that's going to, and the evil aliens, because what Tom DeLonge wants is he says it's evil aliens, the Greys are evil aliens, and we're going to take nuclear weapons and we're going to launch them into the high atmosphere and we're going to bring them down with EMP. And I mean, if that happens, this world is finished because, I mean, this is absolute insanity.
Yeah, good riddance.
And this is what we're proposing is that, you know, we have these evil aliens, we have to kill them. And to me, it's just changing the noun from Jews to evil, you know, whether it's reptilians or Greys or whatever. I listen to the experiencers, the 4,000 experiencers. And if you look at their message, they say 9% are saying it's an evil phenomenon. I believe those are people who have just gotten into it. They just suddenly realized that they've had an abduction experience. When you look at the experiencer data, which is put out by Edgar Mitchell Foundation that talks to these people, you're going to see it's much more spiritual. It's much less evil than people think it is. It's people like Tom DeLonge and people like that are putting out this evil alien message that they're here. Even this... Tompkins guy has got this story that the reptilians are here, they're eating people, and their favorite food is young, blue-eyed, blonde-haired little girls. And I mean, that's like crazy stuff. I mean, it's like insane where these, you know, we're bombing Syria, we're threatening to bomb North Korea, you know, we're bombing Yemen and Pakistan and Afghanistan, and now we're going to take on the aliens. This is absolute insanity.
And still we haven't bombed Canada, but here's the thing. Let me ask you a question. I'm waiting for that. But in all seriousness, with all this said, one thing that I always go back to is Behold the Pale Horse with William Cooper. And he said very specifically in that book that the government one day would do a false flag, false operation, UFO invasion, and it would be something very similar to what we're talking about right now. I mean, what are the odds that that's what's going on here, Grant?
Well, that is Tom DeLonge's people are, there's actually Tom DeLonge quotes them and they actually say, isn't this a wonderful recipe for war? So that's what apparently Wernher von Braun told between 1974 and 1977, that first they're going to use the Russians as a threat, they're going to use asteroids, then they're going to use terrorism, and the ultimate false flag is going to be the alien invasion. And Stephen Greer talks about this, and that's why I wrote my latest book. My latest book is called Managing Magic. So I say it's magic, it's not UFOs. It's much more complex than UFOs. Managing Magic, the government's UFO disclosure plan. And what I say is the government has been trying to disclose this stuff for 70 years, the indirectly pieces of what's going on and protect the classified material. But Tom DeLonge's people are putting out this idea that these are evil aliens and we need to take them on, and we're not covering up from the people, we're covering up from the aliens, which is total nonsense. So that's the reason I wrote this book, was I said Tom DeLonge may sell 30 million albums. He may be this totally powerful guy. When he tweets, 15,000 people retweet. I may be a nobody, but there is no way he's going to drop the evil alien thing into the American public without somebody countering it. So what I've done is I've written this book that counters the evil alien idea that Tom DeLonge is putting out. And I actually go through the fact that Tom DeLonge is an okay guy. He's just got a bizarre idea. And that there are actually people inside the government. If you want to talk in this additional period, I could talk about Trump. I'm the president guy. I know what's going on with Trump. I know he's been briefed. I know who briefed him. I know the whole story. And they are trying to get this thing out. And so I've detailed this all in a book that describes 20 CIA people whose job it is to get it out. I've talked about 5 messiahs. It is their job, or they think it is their job, to bring the message to the people. Tom DeLonge is one. Stephen Greer is another. People who believe that. And they actually have these contacts. They have these high-level contacts. They are real. real. They are people in the government, in the U.S. government, who are feeding material. I was even offered an in. I turned it down. They said, you're in. You can be in on the phone calls. I said, no, I don't want to be in. I want to be a chess player. I don't want to be a piece. I was actually offered an in on an intelligence operation to release the story to the American people, and I turned it down. And I know who the people are in the operation. And they're just ordinary people like you and I. They're people inside the government who go to work every day and don't want to destroy the world for their kids, who are experiencers, who have had encounters, and who think it is time now to get the message out. There are people in the government who are trying to get this message out.
Dr. David Jacobs is another character who my impression, at least, is that he promotes a very one-sided take on things as far as all these aliens being dangerous or a threat to humanity. Nefarious creatures, that there's no positive end to the equation. But let me just ask, just quickly, though, we got to wrap here, of course, too, let's not forget, but don't you think that, as with people, there are decent people, and there are people that are just, they're not so friendly, not so nice, they'll do bad things to you, and there's people that are kind of, you know, middle of the road. Don't you think that's the same, would be the same situation as far as extraterrestrials were concerned? It's kind of a mixed bag?
The way it works is, you and I are souls who are reincarnating in and out of physical existence. You do good things in the morning. You could do good things. You do bad things. I do good things. I do bad things.
Decisions. Yes.
When you move it from an individual and say this person did something wrong, and you move it to a group, whether it be Syrians, whether it be Jews, whether it be gray aliens, to say that there is a race on this world or on another world where everybody's evil, men, women, and children. That is the whole idea behind ISIS. They say the America is the great Satan. Therefore, you can blow up school buses full of little kids because they're all evil. And so the thing is, if you believe there is an evil race, where everybody's evil, then the question is, would you go into the school if you found the grays or the reptilians or whoever these evil aliens are, and they're all evil, would you go into a school where their kids are and kill all their kids so that they couldn't grow up to do evil things to us? There are no evil races. There are, everybody is the same. When you die, you go in front of a council, a review, and you're not going to be able to say, well, you know, if it hadn't been for these evil aliens, I would have done something on the world. Everybody is judged on their own individual. We are all individuals. And if you believe that there are evil, an evil race of any type, you're just setting yourself up for your next life, because you're going to learn compassion and you're going to learn empathy. You're going to come back as whatever you think is evil to show us how it's all done. There are no evil races. There is negative and positive. Each of us does negative and positive things, and this is our learning process. And in the end, we have the karma that takes care of all that kind of stuff. But when you start going to races where everybody in a certain segment, it used to be the Japanese. We dropped two atomic bombs to kill 200,000 people because they were all evil. Then suddenly the evil all evaporated, and now they're great buddies, and we sell and we trade cars. Then it was like the only good gook is a dead gook. The North Vietnamese, they're all evil. Now they make Nike runners. They're our friends now. And so this idea of evil, yes, on an individual basis, there is negative and positive. All of us have negative and positive, but there are no evil races.
I guess what you're going on, really kind of hitting on here, is what's known in logical terms as a fallacy of composition. People can look into that more if they like through a simple DuckDuckGo search, but really just assuming that what is true of the parts is therefore true of the whole. And the opposite, of course, is the fallacy of division, which states that what is true of the whole must therefore be true of the parts. It's a major, just a standard kind of fallacy. So your point is well taken, so thank you very much. Are you planning on doing a follow-up then to Luckman's book, Alien Rock? I heard you're working on that. When can we expect to see the sequel?
Yeah, the book is actually done. I got dragged into this DeLong thing, so I had to do the DeLong book. It's been done except for the cover, and it's going to be called Tuned In, The Paranormal World of Music, and I go into the alien rock stuff, but I also go into downloads of spontaneous songs that were written in under 10 minutes and stories there, and stories of alien music where people wrote alien music and stuff. And then I get into more, and then the next book is going to be musicians who channeled dead composers and stuff. There's some really, really bizarre stories of people getting these massive downloads and stuff like that. So there'll be a second music book, but the Tuned In book will be out, I don't know, in the next couple of months once we get a cover done. It's been put off a number of times. It was actually done and it got put back in terms of doing all these other things. It wasn't just music where people are getting these inspirations. It's every segment of society where you think that we're inventing stuff, and you take a good look, and most of the stuff that we invent, most of the major inventions, did not come from the left rational analytical brain. It was coming from somewhere else. We had help in a lot of different examples. Music is not the only place where people are getting help to compose things.
And that has indeed been widely talked about, so could very well be the case. You said that you're going to be appearing in Boulder, Colorado here quite shortly. I'm not sure if you want to provide any more details regarding that. You also have your website, presidentialufo.com, I believe is the address. Anything more that you'd like to add as far as providing contact information, upcoming appearances, or where people can, what's the easiest way of tracking you down, contacting you, and maybe getting a hold of one of your books?
Okay, I'm doing the Denver, it's at the University of Colorado at the Law Building. It's on May the 5th, and it's, I think it's Exo Politics Boulder is hosting it. I have a lot of friends there. I'm actually going there to do an interview with George Norrie for his Gaia TV thing, and then I'm going to do the lecture. I have a page I like to promote now. I have two Facebook pages, but the one I promote now, I have one, if you look up Paranormal World of Creativity Facebook page. What I do is I put all these bizarre stories. That's all that's on this page, is these stories of musical downloads, alien connection to music, inventions in art and Nobel Prizes, just all these weird stories. It's Paranormal World of Creativity. And of course, with the books, it's at Amazon. I have six books or something like that. If they just go to my page at Amazon and they can see all the various books I've written, I'm moving more and more to consciousness all the time. I had to do the Hillary Clinton book. I got dragged into that. I had to do this Tom DeLonge book. I got dragged into that. But I really don't enjoy that. I more enjoy the consciousness thing, because that's where the answers are, is this bizarre paranormal world of thought and how thought runs the world.
And indeed it does. So thank you once again very much, Grant Cameron. We've managed to obviously cover a lot of ground here and really, I think, put together a pretty decent show, something that hopefully people manage to check out in the archives. We're heading back to the Rogues Gallery end of things, a premium exclusive content portion to today's presentation. On that note, happy sailing.
Okay, thanks for having me on. I appreciate your interest, and we'll have to do it again sometime when I got some new stories.
Sounds good. Ahoy.
Ahoy.
Take care, Grant.
Okay. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Aye, ye buckos. Once again, that about does it for another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. If you're looking for a little more online action, keep in mind, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery After Show coming up next in Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the work we've produced over the past year plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Since April 1st, we've picked up two official patrons and would really love to keep those numbers growing. For the same price as a cup of coffee, you can help keep the Robin Hood sailing smoothly along each month. All it takes is a buck a week for anyone to win access to our regular behind-the-scenes premium Rogues Gallery content. Coming up next month, we have another well-rounded schedule and show format, with speakers booked to appear, discussing anything ranging from politics and the paranormal to spirituality and conspiracy. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN network domain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, bloggers, or pretty much just anyone looking to boost their online visibility and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing,
and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho.